This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending 7th of July 2023. Hello and welcome to the Winchester Talking Newspaper, with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle dated the 6th of July 2023. Your readers today are Tony Bergstrom.
Hello.
John Richards.
Hello.
And Jane Rutter.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, John Parker. The main headlines this week are: anger greets hike in parking, ex-cathedral verger was a vile predator, and hat's the way to do it. Festival is a smash hit. So we start with the story behind the first headline.
About parking. Parking charges in the city centre have seen a dramatic increase, with one rate increasing by more than 700%. The new charges started on Monday, July the 3rd, and see an end to free overnight parking and much higher charges on Sundays. The increases have been criticised by business over the introduction of overnight charges from 7pm to 8am at £3.10. Parking on Sunday for more than 4 hours has increased from £2.10 to £17. This is an increase of £14.90, or 709.5%. Previously, parking on a Sunday was £2.10 all day, but now it will be charged like other days of the week. Overnight prices will apply to Colebrook Street, Cossack Lane, Middlebrook Street, Gladstone Street, Friars Gate, Jury Street, St Peter's, Tower Street and Guildhall Yard. Councillor Kelsey Learney, Cabinet Member for Climate Emergency, said, "These changes only apply to the most central car parks in the Air Quality Action Zone and are designed to cut congestion and improve air quality while ensuring that people continue to visit and enjoy our city centre. Importantly, there are still options for free parking close to the city centre in the evenings and on Sundays. There are park and walk car parks, just a 5 to 10 minute walk into the city centre, including the Cattle Market car park, Worthy Lane, River Park and Chesil Street car parks. All these also offer a free 1 hour parking option in the daytime too, so many will be free to park in from 5pm. We have purposefully not increased the cost for these car parks. Blue badge holders remain free to park at all times in the pay and display car parks in the city centre. Kyoto Kitchen owner Miff Kayum previously described the charges as ill thought and damaging. Reacting to the increases, he said, "It just goes from bad to worse. I can understand that, like everyone else, the city council is under pressure with staffing issues and increasing costs. It's the lack of consultation that results in the policy not taking into account impact on business, on evening workers and public users. I wasn't aware that Sunday charges had gone up so much either, and with the lack of park and ride and other bus services on a Sunday will make it harder for locals to get about." Councillor Caroline Horrell, leader of the Conservative group on the council, said, "This will be bad for businesses. They will be the ones to suffer, especially those still recovering from the pandemic and those trying to get back on their feet. It's outrageous." Councillor Horrell added that the impact would be mostly felt by church congregations on Sunday mornings and gym users. She said, "We need to be doing all we can to support our residents. I'm upset for those who will suffer as a consequence. It will drive residents to other places." Dr. Paul Spencer, executive director of Winchester BID, said, although the recent changes impact only the most central car parks and others close to the city centre are not affected, some businesses are expressing concern about the introduction of these overnight parking charges. We're continuing to discuss with the council the feedback we are receiving about potential impacts on those operating in the evenings, during the night and early mornings, such as hospitality and nighttime economy venues, also gyms and fitness studios. As reported, the increases were approved by Winchester City Council on Monday, June the 5th.
Ex-cathedral verger was a vile predator. A former Winchester Cathedral churchman, who still lives in the city, is awaiting sentence after admitting a string of historical child sex attacks, some dating back more than 50 years. Clive McLeister, 77, pleaded guilty to numerous offences after Metropolitan Police officers retrieved a wealth of historical evidence. McLeister, of the Hospital of St Cross, St Cross Road, Winchester, admitted 8 counts of indecent assault and 2 counts of gross indecency with a child against 2 teenage boys. He will be sentenced on Monday, July the 10th. In the 1990s, McLeister was the verger at Winchester Cathedral, called Custos, before becoming the Queen's Verger at St George's Chapel, Windsor Castle. Detective Sergeant Hannah Stewart, from the Met's Central Specialist Crime Unit, described McLeister as a vile predator who has no place in society. She said, "This has been a long and arduous investigation, with McLeister maintaining his innocence throughout. We are pleased he has finally admitted his guilt just 3 days before we were due to take him to trial to present our case." The initial victim survivor, having sadly passed away after giving police his evidence, was unable to hear the guilty verdict, but his family represented him at court in his absence. The second victim survivor was also sexually abused and exploited by McLeister, a verger in his cathedral. "The impact to both at such a young age has been devastating. They have been extremely brave and shown tremendous strength and courage." At the time of one of the offences, McLeister was employed as a child welfare officer at Tilney Hall School in Hampshire between 1960 and 1971. The first victim was aged between 13 and 15 years. McLeister lived at the boarding school in his own private residence and was assigned as a welfare officer to look after the victim following the death of his grandmother. The abuse took place between January 69 and April 71. The victim disclosed his abuse to police after speaking with a counsellor. He will never know the final outcome of this investigation, as he died in August 2020. Specialist crime detectives launched an investigation. A second victim came forward and disclosed the abuse he had also suffered at the hands of McLeister. He was around 13 years old when he was abused at Southwark Cathedral between January 1984 and May 1987. He was a chorister at the cathedral where Mr. Cleister was the head verger. He was abused at McLeister's flat, which was within the vicarage. Due to the time frame of the offences, Met officers gathered and reviewed a vast amount of historical documentation.
Hat's the way to do it. Festival is a smash hit. Hat Fair, the UK's longest-running festival of outdoor arts, returned to Winchester once again, and huge audiences filled the city streets and green spaces to enjoy a packed programme of family-friendly circus, dance, music, comedy, theatre and more. The festivities began on Friday, June the 30th, with circus and hula hooping from Mr. Banana and Angie Mack. They were the first of the Hatters, busking performers that the festival is named after. There followed ukulele playing amid acrobatic stunts with Barada Street and whisk juggling and unicycle antics with Risky Business. At midday, the musical walkabouts began with the Big Gay Disco Bike playing disco tracks. Gobbledygook Theatre stopped passers-by to request their favourite guilty pop pleasures, while the Serving Sounds Bar captivated the masses with the brothers behind it playing Fatboy Slim simply by touching objects on the bar like a wine glass or beer mat. The public lined the cathedral grounds and the high street as the new carnival company's enormous Lady Justice puppet and Playmaker's Junk Giant headed the carnival, with hundreds of schoolchildren dressed in costumes, joined by community groups including Blue Apple and St John's Almshouses. Following the parade, Hat Fair director Andrew Loretta welcomed everyone to stay and watch Skiing Odyssey, which saw three hilarious skiers darting about, and Tape That involving two acrobats. The Without Walls Festival Family Network supported shows including Family Catwalk Extravaganza and Ancient Futures on a giant stage, while on the Saturday, children swarmed to A La Puppet Cart, four miniature theatres transported on bicycles, and the dancers of Mughal Miniatures for a performance inspired by traditional Indian and Persian paintings. Day two also saw sunshine and Winchester swell with even larger audiences, enjoying yet more shows from the previous day's acts, plus hatting from John Hicks with giant artworks of legendary singers, clown skills and balloon animals from Herbie Treehead, and magic from Richard Kimberley, while Sea Feathers Fleeting saw a female dancer covered in chalk. Across the 2 days, there were also shows from Playmakers Youth Theatre and from local performers including Ukrainian singers, a wheelchair dance group from the Winchester-based historical attraction 878 AD and more, plus works in progress from the University of Winchester students in the Top Hat Showcase. Festival-goers could enjoy crazy golf and screen printing, a Brazilian-style micro-puppet theatre, a hot air balloon, and children's entertainer and Hat Fair veteran Juggling Jake. Hat Fair concluded with Gobbledygook Theatre's High Priestess of Pop and the Disco Druids and the Hush Club DJs.
That concludes the headline stories, and we continue with the death announcements. Auld, Gerald Stuart Auld, on the 2nd of June, aged 54. Clarkson, Vanita Clarkson, known as Anne, on the 24th of June, aged 87. Fletcher, Christopher Brian Fletcher, known as Chris, at Winchester Hospice on the 13th of June, aged 86. Goff, Ethel Rose Goff, known as Dixie, on the 12th of June, at home, aged 95. Hall, Richard William Hall, on the 26th of June, aged 71. Lane, Hazel Pauline Lane, née West, at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital, on the 22nd of June, aged 90. Page, Ray Page, on the 16th of June, aged 88. Prosser, John Hamilton Prosser, on the 3rd of July, aged 87. Timson, Thomas James John Timson, at Abbotswood Court Care Home, on the 27th of June, aged 97. Tippett, Brian Frank Tippett, on the 11th of June, aged 85. Williams, Roy Norman Williams, at home on the 22nd of June, aged 85. And now we have Christian comment.
Right, and this is from Moira Redman, Seeing and Believing. Do you take things on trust, or do you demand evidence? Do you follow your own intuition, even when others tell you that you are wrong? It can be hard to get the balance right. It's not sensible to ignore the help and work of experts, but sometimes we just know something in our hearts, and it doesn't matter what anyone else says. Working out when to trust and when to doubt can be the hardest thing. Many times we're faced with opposing views and even evidence, and we've had to make up our own minds, decide who to trust, decide what is right. And, for example, parents often say they just knew that something was wrong with their child, and they kept insisting when medical staff argued with them. It was the feast of St. Thomas the Apostle earlier this week. He is famously the doubting apostle. He missed an appearance by the risen Lord and tells the other apostles that he cannot believe in the resurrection unless I see the holes that the nails made in his hands and can put my finger into the holes they made, and unless I can put my hand into his side, I refuse to believe. Well, he gets his chance a week later, and after he exclaims, "My Lord and my God," Jesus is quite firm with him. "You believe because you can see me. Happy are those who have not seen and yet believe." That's us. We don't have Thomas's opportunities. And yet, probably, we have a sneaking fellow feeling for him. Nobody wants to be taken for a fool, and in every other area of life, we know that it's only sensible to check up on things, to look for proof, and ask questions and examine the evidence. There are distinguished Christians and theologians who go hard on the importance of scientific proof, an absolute factual basis for the Christian religion. They will present evidence for the existence of God. But for most people, it's not quite that simple. And it's not like believing in gravity or photosynthesis. But we believe in many things we can't prove. There are some very entertaining lists online of things we believe and cannot prove, including ghosts and astrology, with religion, of course, usually on the list too. But some of us also believe in the ultimate goodness of humans. We believe in our love for each other. We believe in family love. We believe in our babies. We believe that our babies know and smile at us. And you don't have to be religious to believe redemption is possible for all of us. An important and comforting thing to have faith in. We can't prove it, but we know it's true. In the Gospel of Mark, chapter 9, comes the story of the man who wants Jesus to heal his son. Jesus says, "With belief will come healing." The man replies, "I believe. Help my unbelief." It shouldn't make sense, but I think most of us know what he means. Faith and doubt do coexist. We just need to help to make that final leap. We're almost there, and we can always ask for help that we need. And that was Moira Redman.
Next, we have the letters to the editor of the Hampshire Chronicle. If you yourself would like to send a letter to the Hampshire Chronicle, you can do so by either telephoning 01962 860836, that's 01962 860836, emailing letters@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, that's letters@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, or writing to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. That's 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. We have, I think, just 7 letters this week, and we'll start with the first one.
This first letter is from Mary Pearson, and it's entitled Taxi Sabotage. The City Council, local businesses and many individuals work hard to ensure that visitors to Winchester find the experience an enjoyable one. But their efforts to please visitors travelling by train and needing a taxi are likely to be sabotaged on arrival at the station. To discover that all taxis in the rank directly fronting the station require pre-booking must confuse and inconvenience visitors no end and give a poor first impression of Winchester. Few visitors, or indeed residents, will look beyond the taxis they directly encounter to see normal taxis parked on the far side of the wide two-lane road. Should an observant person spot a normal taxi, in order to reach it they will have to navigate the two-lane road, which can be very busy at times. This could be a risky undertaking, particularly for those with luggage, poor mobility, or young children. Surely a financial arrangement between non-public bodies such as South Western Railway and WinTax cannot be permitted to have such a detrimental effect on the lives of Winchester residents and visitors alike. That letter is from Mary Pearson, Manor Close, Winnall.
This next letter is from regular contributor Tony Gaster, and it's a cycle lane plea. I feel sure cycling should be encouraged, but in the absence of cycle lanes in our city, cyclists and other traffic are not a good mix. In fact, in terms of energy use, one cyclist using no fossil fuel can often cause many motorists to use much more. Surely this issue must be taken seriously by those in our councils. One other plea. Why do some cyclists choose to be almost invisible by wearing dark clothing? Surely, on safety grounds, high-vis is a must. And that's from Tony Gaster, Old Kennels Lane in Winchester.
And this is a letter from Kate Cooper. Why are they allowing travesty? I find it astounding that the owners of the proposed Turkish restaurant in the old Lock Fine building in Jury Street continue to be allowed to deface that iconic, historic frontage with their tasteless advertising boards. Surely one of the most important roles of the planning department in an ancient city such as Winchester is to protect the many fine old beautiful buildings that make it unique. Why are they allowing such a travesty? And that is from Kate Cooper, Andover Road, Winchester.
Shuna Hubble writes about pharmacy woes. I read with enormous sympathy the letter by your 92-year-old correspondent who has experienced problems with the service at Lloyd's Pharmacy in the Broadway. Having recently looked after my mother through dementia and other illnesses, I can understand their frustration in their dealings with the pharmacy. I would like to point out, however, that this in no way reflects the quality and care of the staff at Lloyd's, all of whom are professional and community-minded. What they are dealing with, as far as I can see, is years of underinvestment in primary care, coupled with the increasingly complex needs of an ageing population. Each time my mother needed a repeat prescription, I had to go to the pharmacy, a 16-mile round trip. I wasn't allowed to use the NHS app, as I was at a different GP surgery from my mother, something that was a preposterous waste of everyone's time, and they then had to phone the GP. Apparently they were using the same phone lines as the ones used by patients, And we all know what that means in terms of waiting times and grating phone music. There was no way that I could email the pharmacy or that they could make electronic requests to the GP. And don't get me started on their dealings with the hospital. Pharmacies are being severely let down by the archaic use of technology in primary care. Is it any wonder that pharmacists and their staff are leaving in their droves? They can't provide the community care they signed up to, and won't be able to until systems are streamlined and technology brought into the 21st century. Perhaps we even need to think radically and move to centralised pharmacy services. So writes Shuna Hubble, Ladywell Lane, Alsford.
This next letter is from Miranda Johnson, and it's a plea to protect the Moors. I was astonished and upset to read the piece about Winnell Moors Nature Reserve in the Chronicle of June 22nd. As a frequent visitor, I can assure you there is nothing remotely neglected about Winnell Moors. It is looked after with passion and dedication by the Wildlife Trust and already absorbs a large number of visitors for such a sensitive area. Those who wish to make more of it would do well to remember that it is a conservation area whose primary function is to look after the area's wildlife, not simply be used as a walking route for people. A manned kiosk? Whose council tax will pay for this? An honesty box for donations? What a ready target for attempted thefts! Part of a walking route? Oh, please, no! Regular visitors who go for the peace and to see wildlife already know the amount of work the Trust has dealing with litter, keeping out dog walkers, swimmers and cyclists, controlling overuse by runners, etc., etc. The city is hugely privileged to have such a wonderful reserve on the doorstep. Please don't ruin it through with enthusiastic, but I fear, ill-thought-out schemes. And that's from Miranda Johnson, Austin Close in Abbots Barton.
And this is a letter headed Equivocation from Chris Gillam. Congratulations to the South Downs National Park Authority for a crystal clear objection to the M3 Junction 9. Scheme, Chronicle June 22nd. Not just that it objects to the scheme as it stands, but it sees no possibility of mitigation or other cant compromises that would make it acceptable. In standing up for the principles on which it was created, it starkly contrasts with the usual trimming behaviour of the national statutory agencies of supposed protection, National England, Historic England, Environment Agencies, etc., etc., when faced with big government development projects. Hampshire County Council, of course, is the major local lobbyist for this scheme, entirely consistently with its signing up to all the major road developments in the South East Transport Strategy. It's been clear for a long time that its declaration of a climate emergency was only ever meant in an Orwellian sense, in the way that the Ministry of Truth only dealt in lies. What has disappointed has been the position of the City Council. After a public statement made at election hustlings that the Council would oppose the M3 capacity increase, it has since stated that the overarching principle of the scheme is acceptable. It's true that it expresses concern about its climate consequences, but concern is not objection. How the council can be the supporter of the principle of a scheme which blows away all possibility of it meeting its climate emergency action plan is beyond understanding. The reason cited is that somehow the movement strategy demands it. This strategy has already manifestly failed to achieve any of its original objectives and has actually morphed back into old-fashioned highways engineers predict and provide for traffic and carbon growth. As Macbeth's porter would have it, faith, there's an equivocator that would swear in both the scales against either scale. We know the SDNPA stands clearly on one principle. Where does the city council stand? And this is from Chris Gillam, Upper High Street, Winchester.
This last letter, entitled Hat Fair Joy, is written by Mark Byford, who is in fact chair of Play to the Crowd. As chair of Play to the Crowd, the arts and education charity that runs the Hat Fair, Theatre Royal and Playmakers, the education arm promoting community engagement and creative learning, I cannot emphasise enough how proud I am about all the Hat Fair team's efforts, creativity and care in putting on Hat Fair 2023 last Friday and Saturday. The carnival parade on Friday, with so many young children involved, was vibrant and colourful despite the weather. On Saturday, in the sunshine, it was wonderful to see thousands of people enjoying themselves in the cathedral outer and inner closes and along the high street. Yes, it was a smaller hat fair in scale this year due to funding pressures, but it felt intensely enjoyable, with a really good variety of quality acts, an excellent vibe and a fantastic turnout. I was also impressed with the effective stewarding and the keeping to time against the published schedule. This takes planning on the day, organisation and discipline involving many hard-working volunteers. The Hat Fair team rose to the challenge admirably. As I left the city centre on Saturday evening to return home, I saw Tom from the Theatre Royal Winchester's Bar, who was stewarding at the Hat Fair stand on the High Street and Jury Street Junction. "How's it been?" I inquired. "Absolutely brilliant," he said. "The reaction all day from so many different kinds of people has been so, so positive." Well, there can be no better testimony than that. The Hat Fair brings so much joy to Winchester and brings in so many diverse acts from across the country and across the world. What an asset it is to the city. Well done to all involved, and let's hope we can rise to the occasion for our 50th anniversary next year and be able to overcome the very real funding challenges we face. And that's from Mark Byford, Chair of Play to the Crowd.
That concludes the letters, and next we will have Chronicle comment, followed by Letter from Westminster, and then First Person.
This week's Chronicle comment is entitled Heavy Blow for Public Over Parking. People wanting to park in the city centre have been thumped with a huge increase in parking charges in the evenings and Sundays. One rate is soaring by 700% in a nasty blow to people already struggling with the cost of living crisis. Free overnight stays will end. Our front page news story reports that this will be felt by many different groups, including church congregations and people involved in the nighttime economy. The Liberal Democrat-controlled council says it's a way of managing traffic, with senior councillor Kelsey Lerney saying it is about encouraging people to stay on the edge, meaning parking away from the city centre or using park and ride. The Chronicle accepts that for the last 30 years, political administrations of all colours have realised that traffic must be controlled. The days of building more and more car parks and altering the townscape to accommodate the motor car and lorry are thankfully well into the past. But the danger here is that these increases will land an overly heavy impact on many people and businesses. It's all very well hoping to encourage park and ride, but it doesn't run on Sundays or late in the evening.
Letter from Westminster. This past week has certainly been eventful for the NHS. Whether it's difficult getting a GP appointment or trouble finding a dentist, we've all been impacted by the workforce challenges facing the service, or we know someone who has. That's why the publication last week of a long-term workforce plan for the NHS is a huge step forward. It's something that the Cross-Party Health and Social Care Committee, which I chair, has long been calling for. For hard-working NHS staff who deliver health services across Winchester and Chandlers Ford, and for patients and their families, the plan gives cause for hope. It's a foundation stone upon which to build the workforce of the future, and, with all the challenges of our health services facing, it couldn't come at a more critical juncture. Last summer, my committee published a major report on workforce recruitment, training and retention in health and social care, and I'm delighted that the government has listened to many of our key recommendations. We have repeatedly called for the publication of staff projection for the short, medium and long term, and I welcome the government's commitment to this in the workforce plan. It will be crucial in enabling health leaders to plan how they will meet future demands. Ministers also listened to our call for a significant expansion in the number of medical school places, something I know will be hugely welcomed in our area. Plans to double the number of places available to 15,000 and to boost the number of training places for GPs by 50% to 6,000 by 2031 are great news. A proposed reduction in the time it takes to train a doctor would also ease some of the pressures and bring us into line with many other countries. The pension reforms that we called for are also being pursued, and I know from my mailbag that this is positive for many consultants living here. And of course, I welcome the focus of the workforce plan on prevention. The plan itself notes that rising demographic pressures and a challenging burden of disease means that demand in the health service is increasing. In short, demand continues to outstrip supply. It's therefore critical that we respond to that by spending more time preventing people from becoming ill in the first place. There are inevitably areas where I wish the government had gone further, and specific issues that we need to explore in more detail. Overall, though, there is much to be excited about, and in the week of the NHS's 75th anniversary, the plan provides grounds for optimism about shaping an NHS that is fit for the next 75 years. And locally, we've honoured that birthday by securing £40 million of capital investment to develop an elective hub and orthopaedic outpatients facility at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital in Winchester. It will provide more capacity and allow more operations to take place, therefore improving access to elective planned surgeries such as hip and knee replacements. At the same time, our trust is also developing proposals to build a new outpatient facility, also in Winchester, specifically for orthopaedics. Scheduled to open in early 2025, this is part of the ongoing investment into services in the city. Winchester is heard in the corridors of power because that's my job. Finally, thank you to all those who've written since I announced I would not be standing again at the next election. I suspect this Parliament has some way to go yet. So much still to do, both here and in Westminster. But thanks for the kindness. And that's from Steve Bryan, MP for Winchester and Chandlers Ford.
first person this week is written by Kimberly Barber. Its title is Painfully Aware of Crisis in NHS. Beep, beep, snore, buzz. As I lay in my bed at Queen Alexandra Hospital, it was hard to get any rest. In amongst the constant beeps of a slightly wonky intravenous drip, which was determined to let everyone know it wasn't working properly every time the lady opposite me moved her arm, and the shouts for help or the cries of pain from others, or the constant buzzer pressing of one very demanding patient, the noises were enough to slightly distract from the pain. I suffer from ulcerative colitis, a condition I was diagnosed with shortly after giving birth to my son. I'm not sure if I had it before pregnancy, maybe, or whether it was triggered by a rather complicated birth, but anyway, I was diagnosed in 2018 after a series of tests, including a colonoscopy. Since then, I have been able to manage the condition mainly through medication, diet choices — I had to give up dairy, which is a travesty as I love ice cream — and attempting to do some exercise every now and then again. Work has been rather busy of late, as has juggling two young children, so the exercise part has slipped down the list of importance. I signed up to do a couch to 5K, but after a few weeks, work commitments and then this latest hospital trip got in the way, so I had to stop, no doubt making my symptoms worse. Anyway, a couple of weeks ago, I started to feel as though I was in labour all over again. Shooting stomach pains, contraction-like cramps, intense waves of pain. Not to mention everything else that comes with ulcerative colitis. I won't share the gory details here, but I'm sure Google could enlighten you. The pains started on Sunday night, and I hobbled through a promised trip to Chessington World of Adventures with two kids, stopping every now and then to take a strong painkiller, rush to the loo, or double over and shout muffled swear words through a clenched jaw. Luckily, the children didn't seem to notice or care. On Tuesday, I woke still feeling terrible, so I rang my GP at Wickham Surgery, who rang me back within an hour, and they are a brilliant surgery. She got me into the surgery where she checked me over and immediately booked me into a bed at QA. Armed with a letter in hand, I arrived at QA, bypassing A&E, small mercies, and was put in a mixed sex ward for assessment. This is where the fun starts. I was very grateful for the bed and for the IV drip and painkillers they administered, but mixed sex wards are truly something else. Let me tell you, six people on a ward separated by thin curtains does not give privacy. The stories and things I heard will stay with me my whole life. Luckily, someone somewhere took pity and I was eventually moved to a ladies' ward before tests came back to show that I had an inflamed colon and was infectious with Campylobacter, which upgraded my status to a private room and bathroom. I was in there three nights in total, one night in my own room, before persuading doctors that I really would be better at home. The one thing that struck me throughout my time is just how stretched everyone was. One nurse, Dame, was so well organised amid the chaos. She exuded an air of calm that meant everything worked. One night it sounded like hell was breaking loose. Someone was kicking off and had assaulted someone. There was blood. A locked door got broken. All nurses were called to deal with the chaos. Security was summoned. Meanwhile, people lay in their beds, pressing their buzzers to get the nurse's attention. The intravenous drip was beeping, but no one dared turn it off. One man, fed up with feeling ignored, wheeled himself up to the duty nurse to ask for something. I heard her reply, exasperated, "Oh, please, I'm just one person." And that is where the problem lies. Our NHS is so overwhelmed. It certainly opened my eyes. Something needs to be done before it breaks entirely.
Now to the week's announcements, and there are a number of what's on items. Next weekend, that's Friday the 14th of July through to Sunday the 16th of July, there is the Foodies Festival at North Walls Recreation Ground. The biggest celebration yet of top chefs, tasty food, delicious drinks and live music. So that's at North Walls Recreation Grounds. There is a website given, enquiries at foodiesfestival, that's all one word, .com, or a telephone number, 0131 220 3276. That's 0131 220 3276 if you need any more information. And then at the Theatre Royal on Thursday the 20th of July, there's a production of Much Ado About Nothing. Award-winning Odd Socks Productions are bringing Shakespeare's romantic romp Much Ado About Nothing to life in their own inimitable, hilarious and irreverent style. For the summer of 2023. Anyway, so that's at the Theatre Royal at 7:30 on Thursday the 20th. The box office number for the Theatre Royal is 01962 840 440. That's 01962 840 440. And then on Saturday the 22nd and through until it'll be Monday the 24th of July, also at the Theatre Royal, there's something called Dragons and Mythical Beasts. Calling all brave heroes, enter into a magical world of myths and legend in this fantastical new show for all the family. That again is at the Theatre Royal. 01962 840 440 is the telephone number for the box office. And then also another family event, that there will be an open-air production of The Secret Garden performed by Chapter House Theatre Company, and that will be on Saturday the 29th of July outside at Winchester Cathedral. So hopefully the weather's good. That will be at 6 p.m. It says, alive with music and song and featuring an array of specially designed creatures, The Secret Garden captures the spirit of summer and promises to be an unforgettable evening of magical theatre. And tickets for that are £19 for adults, £11 for children, and can be purchased from the Winchester Cathedral box office. Other items of news, sunrise around this time is about 5 o'clock in the morning. For those insomniacs, we're certainly around then. And sunset is at 9:20 in the evening. If you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you yourself have a problem with the recording you have received from us, please contact us on 01962 861 229. That's 01962 861 229, and this number can also be found on the key fob attached to the memory stick. And there will be an item of this later on in the in our recording, but you can also now listen to this Winchester Talking newspaper on Ours Community Radio every Sunday at midday. And you can find Ours Radio on digital radio and also on FM channel at 99.8 FM. But there'll be more information about this in an article which we will read later on in our recording. We now continue with further items of news.
Touch Tours broaden Cathedral's appeal. Winchester Cathedral is launching an immersive and inclusive experience for blind and visually impaired visitors. Trained guides will be offering touch tours every 6 weeks for blind and visually impaired people to explore the cathedral's history, architecture, and artefacts through tactile engagement. The idea came from long-standing Winchester Cathedral guide David Farthing, who said the initiative was inspired partly in his capacity as the founding chairman of the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the Blind, and partly because his blind friend Keith Hatter offered to help plan such a tour. Mr. Farthing worked with fellow guides, including Paul Tanner, cathedral staff, and the cathedral clergy, to develop the touch tours, resurrecting the 3D model of the cathedral, which had been specially designed to help blind people. Keith Hatter, who lost his sight 30 years ago, played a pivotal role in the development of the tours, contributing to its design and implementation. Bookings can be made online or by contacting the Cathedral Box Office at 01962 857 275. That's the Cathedral Box Office at 01962 857 275.
Grant helps village boost flood defence. A Hampshire village has boosted its flood defences with money awarded by Scottish and Southern Electricity Network, SSEN. The Cheriton Conservation Volunteer Group received £1,400 from the company's Resilient Communities Fund last year and has now completed its purchase of a generator and pump. These will be used to help the group preserve the local environment and mitigate the impact of floods in the area for the village, which has approximately 1,000 residents. Original plans for the volunteers were altered due to costs, and the decision was made to maximise the effectiveness of SSEN's funding by procuring a single pump and generator, which boast twice the power of the equipment they had initially considered. A spokesman for Cheriton Conservation Volunteer Group said, "Having had to reconsider our options to help address groundwater issues and limit the damage caused by flash flooding, the group decided that it was an opportunity rather than a problem. We were able to purchase the equipment from a local dealer in the neighbouring village, a move that helps us to streamline future maintenance and ensure swift assistance when needed, further bolstering the group's ability to respond effectively to environmental challenges. The Cheriton Conservation Volunteer Group is committed to the preservation and protection of the local ecosystem, and we'd like to thank SSEN for the funding that has helped us make such a difference in safeguarding the village green and surrounding areas." SSEN's head of region for the Southeast, Andrew O'Connor, said, "I'm delighted that the Cheriton Conservation Volunteer Group has been able to boost the resilience of their village in the face of flood risk. Their hard work and forced change of plan shows how determined they have been in taking steps to protect their local area. In what might seem an odd wish, I hope they never have to use the equipment that has been funded through SSEN, and that it simply brings them peace of mind, knowing they can act quickly if they have to."
Radio broadcast for Talking Newspaper. And you've probably guessed this is about us. Winchester Talking Newspaper has teamed up with a community radio station to help provide local news to even more people. The Winchester Talking Newspaper, WTN, provides weekly audio recordings of extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle to blind and partially sighted people. A group of volunteers meet weekly to record the audio, and the cost of producing these recordings is covered by fundraising and donations. WTN has now teamed up with AWAS FM, Winchester's newest community radio station on the digital broadcast network. Each weekly recording will now be broadcast on the radio station every Sunday at midday. John Richards, WTN chairman, said, "Having our weekly recordings broadcast on the radio is really a really exciting development for Winchester Talking Newspaper. Our volunteers are dedicated to recording extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle every week and sending memory sticks to our blind and visually impaired listeners. This free service keeps them in touch with local news and developments. Most listeners play the recordings we send them on a playing box, but the ability to access the recordings on the radio is a thrilling new step. We thank AWAS so much for this opportunity." Ali Begg, project manager for AWAS Radio, said, "We want to reach out to all parts of the community, and so we have joined forces with WTN, who provide a service for blind and partially sighted people, giving them access to national and regional news. Working together, we can now ensure that the underrepresented groups are recognised and catered for adequately. It's an exciting time for us, and we look forward to reaching out to the whole population of Winchester." Regional editor for the Hampshire Chronicle, Kimberly Barber, said, "We are all excited to hear the Winchester Talking Newspaper on AWAS FM. The service is run by dedicated volunteers who diligently record a version of the Hampshire Chronicle each week to distribute to people across the city on memory sticks. This radio show means their hard work will be able to be heard by many more people, which is great for them and great for us to show off some of the hard work our journalists do in the local area every day. We are delighted to support such a great community initiative. Please do tune in. The Winchester Talking Newspaper will be broadcast every Sunday on AWAS FM at midday."
Health chiefs deny claims over sacking. The Hampshire NHS Trust has rejected claims that a much-loved Winchester doctor was fired for blowing the whistle on patient safety. Hundreds of people have shown their support for maternity consultant and obstetrician Martin Pittman after he was dismissed by Hampshire Hospital's NHS Foundation Trust at the beginning of March. The doctor, who's been admirably described by former patients and colleagues, claims he was fired for raising concerns on patient safety due to issues such as dwindling staff numbers and faulty equipment. But following Mr. Pittman's appearance on ITV breakfast show Good Morning Britain, the Trust has shut down the doctor's reasoning. The statement posted by HHFT on Tuesday, June the 27th, said, "Dismissal is always a last resort, and since Hampshire Hospitals was formed 11 years ago, no member of staff has ever been dismissed for whistleblowing or raising concerns over patient safety, and they never will be. Mr. Pittman has not been actively working at the hospital for 2 years, and the questions surrounding his dismissal will be resolved at an employment tribunal later this year. We actively encourage our staff to raise any concerns they have in a number of different ways and support those who do so. The Trust ensured that all issues raised by Mr. Pittman were thoroughly and impartially investigated, including in some instances through external review. Every effort was made to repair his relationships with the maternity and clinical colleagues in question, efforts which were unfortunately unsuccessful. We are increasingly concerned that Mr. Pittman's representation of the reasons for his dismissal could discourage others from raising important issues. Patient safety remains our top priority, and our maternity teams work exceptionally hard together to provide the best care to our patients. We are proud to be fully recruited to midwives and of the progress being made to offer the best possible service to those in our care." The high-profile interview alongside former patient and TV star Sarah Parrish has attracted around 500 more members to the Facebook group Friends of Martin Pittman, with approximately 1,500 people now rallying round the doctor on Facebook, in addition to 100,000 views on Twitter.
Fears over solar farm. A countryside charity has criticised plans for a new solar farm in the countryside near Winchester. CBRE Hampshire opposes the proposal at Pitt Down, south of Sarum Road, Sparshot and Farley Mount. The scheme has divided opinion, with more than 100 objections and 75 in support. CBRE Hampshire has said that they believe the scheme should be in a different place. Christopher Napier, Vice President of CPRE Hampshire and Chair of the South Downs and Central District Group, said, CPRE Hampshire supports the principle of renewable energy, but we also believe it should be the right proposition in the right location. We believe the application at Pitt will have a major adverse impact on landscape, within a landscape acknowledged to be of high quality and sensitivity, and a significant loss of visible amenity and tranquility. What we would like to see are more plans for solar energy on brownfield sites, for example, the roofs of large industrial and agricultural buildings. Where a countryside location is deemed essential, the best and most versatile agricultural land should be protected and the landscape fully considered. With more and more solar farm applications across the country, we need to be aware of the cumulative effect. We want maximum output with minimal impact, and we believe that is possible. Developers Novus and Innova estimate that the solar farm would save 4,064 tons of carbon dioxide per year and power around 4,722 homes annually. It would operate for 40 years.
Cafe offers broad appeal. A cafe and co-working space at Winchester's former pumping station is launching a new membership scheme. The Pump House in Garnier Road, St Cross, opened last year and is owned by Alex Donnan and Laura Turner. The duo are encouraging more people to use the facilities. Laura said, "We have launched the new membership scheme at the Pump House to make it more accessible to the whole community, business owners, co-workers, and the wider Winchester community. More than just a co-working space, the Pump House is a place to relax with friends in the lounge, entertain clients or friends in the restaurant, and for when you need a fresh space to work or a change of scene from home, our co-work spaces are there for just that." Membership is now £120 per member per month, plus a one-off £50 joining fee. Members have access to everything the Pump House has to offer. Whether people want to become a member to expand their business network, to work away from home a few times a week, or pop in for brunch or lunch with friends, everyone's welcome. For more information, you can go online and visit the website. This is all lowercase, thepumphousewinchester.co.uk, no spaces. I'll say it again, thepumphousewinchester.co.uk.
Hospice maintains Red Roses tradition. Children and young adults who visit hospices at Naomi House and Jack's Place have taken part in a heartwarming annual tradition to pay the hospice's rent. Every year, on or around Midsummer's Day, the hospice gives 12 red roses as a peppercorn rent to Naomi and David Cornelius in Sutton Scotney. This beautiful tradition has a long history, originating before Naomi House first opened in 1997. Naomi and David's mother, Mary Cornelius Reed, permitted the construction of a hospice on her land in the Sutton Manor estate. In return, she requested a symbolic gesture, an annual rent of a dozen red roses. Mary sadly passed away in 2014, but the tradition lives on. When Naomi and David are presented with the roses, they then gift them to one of the families visiting the hospices. Mark Smith, chief executive of Naomi House and Jack's Place, said, "Midsummer's Day marks a very special date in our diary. It's a time when we celebrate the generosity of the Cornelius Reed family by paying our rent with a dozen red roses. We are so grateful for the friendship and support of Naomi and David Cornelius Reed. I'd like to thank them for helping to make a positive difference in the lives of the children, young adults and families who use our hospice services." Naomi Cornelius Reed added, "It's always a pleasure to come back to the hospices and meet the children, families and staff. It's an honour to continue the tradition of receiving the beautiful Naomi red roses in the tranquil gardens of the hospice. Sharing tea and cake afterwards seems like a fitting way to enjoy the hospitality of this incredibly caring facility in the heart of our community."
School pupils celebrate academic success. Pupils at the Pilgrim School are celebrating academic success with a range of scholarships and exhibitions. Six boys are celebrating musical success with four scholarships, two to Winchester College and one each to Sherborne and Charterhouse. Meanwhile, two others have gained exhibitions to Radley and Eton. Pilgrims also has boys celebrating an art scholarship and a sports exhibition to Sherborne, and another receiving the Dr. Gray All-Rounder Award to Bradfield. In addition, 10 boys have passed the Winchester College entrance exam, and 10 boys have achieved strong common entrance results to a range of schools in the south of England, including Eton, Charterhouse, Bradfield, Marlborough, Sherborne and Canford. Alastair Duncan, interim head of Pilgrim School, said of their achievement, "Seeing the varied and strong achievements here proves that we encourage and support our boys to follow their strengths, whether academic, musical, sporting or artistic. I'm very proud of these boys and wish them well in their future schools."
Call to postpone station scheme. Plans for a major redevelopment, plans for a major development around Winchester Railway Station are moving forward, but civic chiefs were urged last night to postpone the scheme. The City Council is looking at a £150 million+ regeneration of the land between Gladstone Street and the cattle market on Andover Road, including the station car parks and Carfax. Ideas include up to 250 new homes, offices, shops, cafes and restaurants. A council report said the aim was to make it a place where people would want to linger rather than just pass through. For the last 12 months, council officers have been undertaking preliminary work, but a local resident said the work should be stopped because of the economic climate. The scrutiny committee is looking at a report to the Cabinet on July the 18th that is recommending the Council produce a master plan for development. Imogen Dawson of Andover Road told the Scrutiny Committee that financial uncertainty meant the scheme should be immediately suspended. Mrs. Dawson also said more student flats on the cattle market would turn the area into too much of a student village, quote, "and that would be not a good balance for the local community," unquote. The committee heard that no decision on proceeding with the scheme would be made before late 2024 or early 2025, when the economic climate had improved. He'd also heard that Network Rail, which owns the car parks at the station, has decided not to be a partner with any development. Emma Taylor, Council Strategic Director, said the Office of Road and Rail had told Network Rail that any redevelopment would have to see a lost parking space replaced, one for one. Ms. Taylor said analysis had shown that despite inflation, soaring construction costs and high interest rates, development in the Carfax area and the cattle market would be viable. Because of the economic climate, now is the right time to development work, she said. Once we are ready, hopefully a change of economic climate for the better, we will be ready with a scheme to move forward. Councillor Leader Martin Todd said any development on Gladstone Street would be linked to new park and ride sites to the north of Winchester at King's Barton, and potentially Sir John Moore Barracks. Councillor Todd said, one of the reasons projects in Winchester take time is the need to take people with you to hear what they say and put in plans that address those concerns. Councillor Caroline Horrill, Conservative Group Leader, was disappointed about Network Rail's decision. We do the hard work and they say maybe. Are our plans half-baked if they're not with us? Their decision is fundamentally changing the dynamics of this. Councillor Brian Laming asked why new offices were being proposed when there are several large ones empty, such as nearby Cromwell House and the former Den Plan office.
New 60-bed care home ready to open its doors. To mark its completion, Winchester-based charity Brendan Care has received the key to its new purpose-built 60-bed care home from construction company Rial. Presenting the symbolic key to residents Pamela Blackburn and Irene Lay was Paul Shillabeer, Rial's South West's St Giles View project manager. Pamela and Irene will be moving to St Giles View from Brendan Care Park Road. St Giles View in Quarry Road is Brendan Care's first care home to provide dedicated dementia care, as well as nursing, respite and end-of-life care in Winchester. Set over four floors, the purpose-built care home also offers communal areas so that members of the local community can join residents in a range of activities to improve well-being and combat loneliness. Residents from Brendan Care's Park Road and St Cross Grange care homes, operated by charity care provider Greensleeves, will be the first occupants of St Giles View. Marianne Wanstall, Brendan Care's CEO, said, "We are all thrilled to see the completion of St Giles View, our first new care home for 5 years. This is another notable milestone for us as St Giles View expands our care services in Winchester to include dedicated dementia care as well as nursing, respite and end of life. We are very much looking forward to welcoming St Giles View's first residents from Brendan Care Park Road and St Cross Grange, as well as our fantastic new caring team who will be working there. It's also wonderful that St Giles View will be supporting more people in the local area, providing new social links for community groups in this part of Winchester."
Teacher is selected for England, hockey. King's School Head of PE, Alastair Birch, is well known throughout the school community as an exceptional leader and a man who can encourage the least enthusiastic pupils to take to the field or the pitch or the court. His involvement with the Winchester Hockey Club is legendary and stretches back some 20 years. However, another feather has recently been added to his cap, and the school is celebrating with him on his selection for England hockey team in the European Masters Hockey Championship. Good luck to Mr. Birch. King's School is cheering you on all the way.
This next piece, which is entitled Local News Titles May Be Forced to Shut by BBC Plan, is written by Kimberly Barber, and it's less an article and more her opinion, as, of course, editor of the Hampshire Chronicle Group. And this is what she has written about this. As your local news title, we believe firmly in the importance of trusted local journalism to communities up and down the UK. We invest in trained journalists who seek to challenge authority and hold power to account on your behalf, bringing you the news that matters when, where, and how you want it. Our audiences are huge. 40 million people now read local news media in print or digital every month. Trust in our journalism is rising too. A recent survey found 81% of Brits agree that they trust the news and information they see in their local news media. It's no exaggeration to say that some local news titles may be forced to close if the Across the UK plans are not stopped, leading to the BBC becoming the lone voice in some local communities. A voice, by the way, that doesn't have the same freedom to campaign on your behalf as we do, because of impartiality requirements. For anyone who believes in freedom of speech, as we do, that's a pretty terrifying thought. The problem lies with the BBC's enormous and unique power granted to the corporation by the licence fee, and the impact of this upon other news providers. The licence fee enables the BBC to do things the commercial sector can't, such as running websites with no advertising or paywalls on them. We are always up for fair competition. Fair competition drives innovation and quality in many different sectors, but because of the enormous power of the licence fee, the BBC's Across the UK plans are the exact opposite of fair competition. Under the plans, online readers and the commensurate advertising revenues, which we used to pay our local journalists, will be sucked away from our websites to the BBC's. That pressure on our resources, at a time when we are grappling with a host of other challenges, could cause some local titles to call it a day. That would be a disaster for the communities affected. So, far from boosting local journalism, we believe the BBC's Across the UK plans will in fact irrevocably damage local news. What's more, there's no need for the BBC to do this. The commercial local news sector already serves communities across the entire length and breadth of the UK. Enshrined in a royal charter, guardrails which are supposed to prevent the BBC misusing its power in this way have completely failed. So, we need your help to tackle this problem. By contacting your MP and asking them to write to government about this issue, you can make a real difference. Your MP can express concern about the impact of the BBC's Across the UK plans and ask government what steps it's going to take to get the BBC to change course. The local news sector believes in and values the contribution the BBC makes to our vibrant news ecosystem. But there is a real risk that the Across the UK plans could wreak untold damage on our vibrant local journalism sector. We cannot allow that to happen. With your help, we can get the BBC to be a better neighbour to local commercial titles, ensuring a vibrant and diverse local news sector for many years to come.
And on a lighter note, new city centre jewellery and accessory shop opens. A popular jewellery and accessories chain has opened the doors of its Winchester branch. As previously reported, Claire's has taken over the former Smiggle unit next door to Superdrug and Halifax. After weeks of work, the branch opened its doors on Friday, June the 30th, with a celebratory ribbon cutting carried out by staff members of the new branch. District Manager Luke McNair, 32, said, "We came to look at the area about 6 or 7 weeks ago, thought it was a very good area to have a store, something that was lacking here, and within 2 weeks we'd found and secured a location and had 4 weeks' notice to get it up and running. I think Winchester is a great market. Although we've got stores very close to us, we've always had that urge to have a store in Winchester, as many of our customers travel from Winchester to Southampton or Eastleigh or Basingstoke store, so we thought we'd give Winchester our slice of the market. I believe it adds that Claire's brand, but also we're ear-piercing specialists, so what we can do is provide that service on the High Street as well."
Ticket offices. Plans have been announced for a mass closure of railway station ticket offices in England, according to the Rail Delivery Group, RDG. The proposals, aimed at modernising customer service, would see nearly all ticket offices shut down, with only the busiest stations maintaining their facilities. At time of writing, it was unclear if the ticket offices at either Romsey Station or Winchester Station will be closed. The move is being driven by the government's pressure on the rail industry to save money due to the revenue decline caused by the COVID pandemic. In response to the announcement, trade unions, disability groups, and public transport organisations have expressed their concerns, fearing job losses and potential difficulties for vulnerable passengers. Rail operating companies will start publishing details of the offices they intend to close from July the 5th, with just under 1,000 to be put forward.
Ex-army major stole £100,000. A Winchester man has avoided jail after stealing more than £100,000 from the Hampshire and Isle of Wight cadet force to feed a gambling addiction. Thomas Megerson of Rockbourne Road, Hairstock, was given a 21-month suspended sentence at Winchester Crown Court on Thursday, June the 29th. Megerson pleaded guilty to one count of fraud. The court heard that Megerson, 61, took £102,699.80 from the cadet force's account. Megerson was in sole charge of the account, which was a mix of Ministry of Defence grants and private donations. Matthew Lawson, prosecuting, told the court that Megerson stole the money from 215 to 220. Mr. Lawson read a statement from Theresa Farmer, Hampshire and Isle of Wight ACF's commandant. It said, "We're very disappointed and we feel let down. This is best described as an abuse of his position. The substantial loss of funds has had a detrimental impact on young people's lives. Many businesses have lost financial trust in us as a result. It will take 5 to 6 years for us to recover." Megerson was given a 21-month sentence suspended for 18 months. He will also have to complete 200 hours of unpaid work and up to 20 days of a rehabilitation activity.
City goes for rooftop solar. Homes and businesses across Winchester have been investing in rooftop solar systems as the cost of electricity remains high. According to a new UK database, Winchester registered more than 450 new solar installations in the first 5 months of 2023. Winchester Action on the Climate Crisis, WINAC, analysed local data from the database in its 2023 report on renewable energy in Winchester. The group found that local homeowners have continued to invest in rooftop solar panels despite the withdrawal of government subsidies in 2019. According to the data, almost 1 in 10 households in the district has a registered solar system. WINAC Chair Count Alex Clayton said, "It's exciting to learn that Winchester households are buying into the benefits of rooftop solar systems. They reduce dependence on expensive electricity from the national grid and increase local generation of clean electricity. However, we must not be complacent. As our report shows, over 3,500 local rooftop schemes together generate only 3% of the amount of electricity currently consumed in the district. This is less than a single solar farm, such as the new development at Three Maids Hill near Winchester." WINAC's report concluded that to remove electricity provided by fossil fuels from the national grid, there will need to be significant expansion of solar farms in rural districts.
Date to quiz developers. The public will have the chance next week to question the developers of Bushfield Camp on the edge of Winchester. The church commissioners and partners want to build a business park on the former army base. The developers had been due to speak at the last meeting of Badger Farm Parish Council, but pulled out at short notice. The parish council said the developers have agreed to attend the meeting, open to the public, on Monday at Badger Farm Community Centre. The council is keen for people to attend to find out more about the multi-million pound scheme for a business park, hotel, oblique student accommodation, shops, cafe, nursery and sports facilities. The surrounding chalk downland would be preserved. The council said the company dealing with the development of Bushfield Camp have agreed to attend the next parish council meeting on the 10th of July 2023, so you can put all your questions to them and voice any concern you may have about the proposed development. This will have such a huge impact on Badger Farm and Winchester as a whole, so please do come to the meeting. Bushfield Camp was a military base from World War II until the 1970s. The City Council Cabinet recently backed the master plan. The site was earmarked for business use in the local plan adopted in 2013.
City Centre Church finds new head priest. A Winchester church has a new priest after a five-year search. Reverend Jamie Franklin has taken over the position of priest in charge of Holy Trinity Church on Upper Brook Street. Reverend Franklin, 33, a father of four, said that he is really, really excited to take over the position. He said, "I lived here before on this road. I knew the previous incumbent, and I've known about the fact that there's been a vacancy, which is known as an interregnum, for these 5 years. I think it's fantastic for the church that they created this post, and I'm delighted to be here. I am very excited about this ministry and what it's going to lead to, and I'm delighted for the people here that they've got a priest, because it's tough for the laity to keep things going. They've got busy lives, and yet they kept things going on here. There's lots to do and everyone is putting lots of effort in, particularly the church wardens. So I just hope to come in here, help them, encourage them and see things flourishing." Holy Trinity is the first church that Reverend Franklin has been in charge with after he was fully ordained. He previously held a position at St George's in the Meadows in Oxford whilst he finished his curacy before returning to Winchester. He began duties on Tuesday following a licensing ceremony. He added, "I think it's going to be a great service. There are many people coming from the local community, people from my previous parish, as well as friends and family and members from elsewhere." Church warden Kathy Maybe said, "We're extremely pleased that after 5.5 years we have someone, and hope he will be able to reach out to people, bring more people in to uplift the church."
Museums Exhibition. A museum in Winchester's Peninsula Barracks has announced the date of its annual exhibition. The Gurkha Museum's summer showcase, titled With Due Ceremony, aims to highlight the illustrious history of Gurkha involvement on state and ceremonial occasions. Gurkhas are renowned for their bravery and ferocity in battle, and their reputation of professionalism, presentation, and ceremonial flair. For more than two centuries, Gurkhas have deployed on a range of high-profile ceremonial occasions and events. The month-long exhibition, starting on Tuesday, the 1st of August, celebrates the selection of the Gurkha ceremonial duties, presenting the grandeur and significance through photographs, video, and artifacts from the museum's collections. Museum Director Dr. Darren Bauer said, "For more than 200 years, Gurkha soldiers recruited from Nepal have loyally served this country, many making the ultimate sacrifice. This exhibition showcases the contribution Gurkhas have made to state and ceremonial occasions, most notably at the recent state funeral of Her Majesty Queen Elizabeth II and the coronation of King Charles III and Queen Camilla. This exhibition will highlight the Gurkhas' unique impact when due ceremony is demanded." The exhibition is open to the public from Tuesday, the 1st of August, until Thursday, the 31st of August. Entry to the exhibition is free with admission to the museum.
MP, vanishing constituency, no surprise. Meon Valley MP has reacted to the news that her constituency will vanish following the Boundary Commission's recommendations. On Wednesday, June the 28th, it was confirmed that the Winchester constituency will take part of both the Fareham and Meon Valley constituencies, whilst losing Chandlersford to Eastleigh. In the Boundary Commission's report, it said, "In order to reduce the electorate of the Eastleigh and Fareham constituencies, we propose a Hedge End constituency comprising areas around the River Hamble, including Titchfield, Shedfield and Bursledon. We also proposed a Fareham and Waterlooville constituency, which included the eponymous towns and rural areas of the Lower Meon Valley between the two. Our proposed Winchester constituency extended further south than the existing constituency to include the remainder of the City of Winchester local authority." In April, Meon Valley MP Flick Drummond lost a vote to be the MP for the newly formed Fareham and Waterlooville seat to Suella Braverman. Mrs. Drummond said, "It's no surprise the final recommendation from the Boundary Commission will see Meon Valley vanish as a constituency. We asked it to consider alternative proposals, but without success. However, residents should have no concerns. I will continue to represent this wonderful area to the very best of my ability until the next general election."
That concludes our extracts for this week. Our thanks to our editors for selecting the extracts this week, to the copying, dispatch and memory stick preparation teams, and to our readers today, who were Tony Bergstrom.
Goodbye.
John Richards.
Goodbye.
And Jane Rutter.
Goodbye.
And from me, John Parker, goodbye too. Please return the memory stick as soon as you're able, not forgetting to put your address label inside the envelope. And a reminder that you can also hear Winchester Talking Newspaper on Awas Community Radio, either on digital radio or on 99.8 FM every Sunday at midday.